and welcome to episode 232 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars, and joining me this week are a man who's everyone's award winner. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
You just told me to fuck off and then you're nice to me. That's how it goes on this show. But you witnessed it, didn't you, Peony?
I'm saying nothing. Only professionalism here, I guess.
that's clearly a guest and not someone who's on a regular show. Yes, this week we're joined by the creator of Park Bench Kensington, which was mentioned on one of our recent shows, and artist in residence at the House of Illustration, which we're going to talk about in a minute. It's Peony Gent. Hello.
Hey,
Peony. Yeah, full disclosure, Peony and I sit opposite each other at work.
Yes. And
she's made me promise not to wind her up in a blood oath, which we've discussed.
Yeah, I discovered that Nobrow has blood oaths.
Yeah, this is quite common.
We don't like to publicise it too much, but sometimes there's no other choice, really.
Yeah, arguments are usually settled with knife fights in our office.
Blimey, really? Yeah. Is it like a sort of like Game of Thrones / Sabrina the Teenage Witch mashup in that office?
So what is Sabrina the Teenage Witch?
Well, I just thought, like, I'm thinking
back Vin. Where's he gone?
I'm thinking more of the new Netflix series, which I've watched.
Oh, I very much was imagining, talking cats and pink
carpets. That's what I was thinking of,
like, I know. That's why I thought I had to clarify. I had to clarify it, because the new one's more about, like, you know, satanic rituals and all that.
Oh, yeah, no, that's much more on brand.
Oh, okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Yeah, satanic rituals, that's what we do.
Yeah, and I tell you what is almost against God. It's the fact that Dan's not here this week.
I know, I miss him. He's moving house.
But yeah, he's healthy, he's well, he's sexy as always. He's just moving house. So, you know, next week will be a live show from the housewarming.
I don't know if anyone knows this, but Dan was actually a candidate. He was Buckethead.
Look. We're not going to go there.
We're not going there. I like to start that rumour.
Yeah. But we can also start rumours about the sort of things that Dan has in his house.
we're going to steal.
He has an armoury, doesn't he? Surely he's got an armoury.
As most good people do.
Yeah. Probably a fireman's pole. Sorry. I'm waiting for Tony to say something, but it's like
I'm just letting you dig a hole. I'm behind you, Dan. I think it's horrific.
Oh, don't give me that. Don't act like this just because he's not on the show.
That pole, though, gets danced around a bit. You can see him throwing
his
booty.
No, I was thinking more of a Batman, sort of like, you know.
Oh, I see.
Why do you just...
I go to a lot of strip clubs.
on your own.
On my own. Yeah.
But yes, it's going to be a very professional show this week.
The worst thing is all the office will listen to this, Penny, and we've just started talking about strippers.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But as soon as they heard Tony's voice, they thought, right, okay, let's see where this goes.
To be fair, I wish I could say that Tony was more professional in the office, but I can confirm not deny.
I'm a cheerful face. When I walk in, I go, hello, chums, and everyone's there. We have a laugh.
Does everyone cheer? Like, you know, Norman cheers. Do they always? Yeah. Do you get like a round of applause whenever you walk in the office?
No, a little bit of a freeze frame, and his name comes up.
It's rather than cheering, just hear them going,
like a mass groan.
Peony had a nice, and I had a nice conversation about embroidered jeans the other day. That's how cool we are, isn't it?
Oh yeah, we did. Tony said he was going to invest.
Yeah, I might try it. Thinking of it.
Rewind. who, what, where, and how? What?
Well, Tony was just wearing this really, really nice pair of embroidered jeans. It's quite obvious.
Yeah, they were eagles. They were proper Texas eagles. And
where were the eagles?
No, we're not going there. I have to work with Penny. She's a nice lady. We're not going.
No. I thought were they on the thighs?
Right, I know where you're going with this. They were not on my buttocks.
No, I didn't say you had butt eagles.
We're doing that new strip, me and you, Vince. Yeah. It's coming.
Yeah. The magnificent butt eagles.
Going to get that t-shirt.
Yeah.
Speaking of t-shirts.
Yeah.
No, that's...
I see you had your Comic House hat on, didn't you, in New York?
Yes, I've been away for a few days for a break. I sort of didn't really mention it to anyone apart from my nearest and dearest, such as Tony and Dan.
For tax reasons.
Yeah. It was a tax write-off. No, yeah, I've been in New York for a couple of days and repping the sponsor of this lovely show, Comic House. I say repping. I've got a hat with Comic House written on it.
And you wore it, you wore it up a tall building.
Yeah, it was up a tall building, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
If you go to my Instagram, you can see
it. All right, millennial.
No, I'm not a true millennial because I haven't sort of mastered the art of the hashtag.
Oh, okay. That's what gets you followers, isn't it, the hashtag?
I think so. I mean,
we'll be talking to Peony about that because she knows all about hashtags, don't you, Peony?
Oh, love them. Unfortunately, yes.
Amazing. Yeah. So we're going to mine her for information later because we just long to be popular on this show. That's what we're all about.
One
day. I thought we were going for the opposite, to be fair.
No, I think if we act naturally, it'll be the opposite, Tony. But you know what is popular? Comic House. Yes, they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference, and they sponsor this show every week, and they support us emotionally, physically, and in any way, shape, or form. But yeah, and on their website, there's a huge selection of titles on their database. If you self-publish and you've got like hard copies of your book, you can list your book on there for free and start selling issues like straight away. You know, they only charge like a penny. Sort of commission, and it's just basically another avenue to sell your book. But the thing that we've been harping on about ever since it started, and it's only getting bigger and better, is the Comic House digital app. Yes, it's basically it's like Netflix for comics. So, and it's only £3 a month sort of subscription, and you get access to an enormous library of digital comics like that's just been added to all the time. Tony, what's on there?
Oh,
at the
it's
moment?
Me, isn't it? I'm doing this bit, aren't I?
Yeah, you are.
It's so Clockwork Inc. new comics up. Heads into the Vortex by our mate Rick, The Cosplayer That Doomed the Earth by Dan Harris, Seasonally Santa Claus Versus the Nazis, and then a book that someone's obviously broken into my iPad and looked at, because it's called Foxy Ladies, and it's the last book apparently they looked at on this program.
I'm not saying anything, Tony.
Don't know what it's about.
But there's all of those books and more. A lot of our past guests have got stuff on there.
Yep.
All of our future guests will have stuff on there, as we know, because we are lining up stuff for the next year, for 2020, because this year is almost over. That's unbelievable. I'll whinge about it in a minute. But yeah, Comic House is brilliant, and that the digital comics, the library's just getting bigger all the time, and it's not like something where the comics are going to disappear. And also, if you're sort of self-published or you've got digital versions of your books, and it's another avenue to make a little extra coin, it's properly worth doing, people. It really
especially
is.
If you've run out of a print run of a book, why don't you put it on there? Some people might think, oh, I don't really want to put it on there till my book's sold or something, but you know, you've only got a few left, there's no conventions for a while now, put it on
The only thing we sort of say to people is sometimes if you've got a Kickstarter, do all the Kickstarter backers first before you put it anywhere else. But that's just in general.
Yeah, timings.
But Comic House is brilliant. Go to, if you want to find out more about a 14-day free trial and all this stuff that we're talking about and we ruin in the sponsorship ads every week, then go to comichouse.com to find out more.
There you go.
Well done,
Tony. I think
Tony.
We're on board for another year, aren't we? I think we were chatting to him again the other day.
We are indeed. It's a match made in heaven.
Yeah, both. He just laughs at our ridiculous ads.
Yes, and we love his brilliant app. So there you go. But I mean, we joke about the sponsorship ads, but we wouldn't.
No, I look at it weekly. Definitely,
We wouldn't have a sponsor if we didn't actually believe in it. So, simple as that.
Unless we buy any car when offers £1,000 a week, we'll be right.
Well, that's your price. That's the price of your soul, is it?
It's a lot cheaper than that, my friend.
All right. What sponsor would you draw the line at?
Who wouldn't I sponsor? God, dear, it's hard to do this without getting political, isn't it? I wouldn't sponsor because I'm a vegetarian, so I wouldn't go with anyone who sold meat or killed animals for a living. I think that's where I'd probably go with it.
Oh, do you know what? I was expecting that to be a hilarious segue, but unfortunately,
look,
no.
I'd sell fleshlights if I could. Do you know what I mean?
What? What?
Have you never listened to a Kevin Smith podcast? He sells them, doesn't he?
Yes, I've listened to a Kevin Smith podcast. And
they're not. That's not a natural combo that I would have thought would... not really that I wanted to know that either.
I've never owned one, Peony. I don't even know what it looks like, to be fair. But
Tony, please, I have to look at you at work. I don't want to have this conversation.
Oh, dear. And if you put the discount code...
Kate's going to bully me now.
Yeah. Oh, is this episode the one that gets you picked on for the next year?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Oh, yeah, I think so.
Christmas has truly come early.
We've been waiting all year, but it's finally here.
Just to get me bullied in the office. And Graham, good. Yep.
But yes, yeah, it's just going to be a chilled out... show this week.
Yeah,
this is officially our last proper guest of the year. I'm not counting that end of year quiz.
Oh yeah, they're just like pals coming on, aren't they? I've been to them today, actually. Yeah. I've started writing the questions for that one.
What, not now, because we've got a guest on, Tony.
Okay, fine.
That'd be rude.
Yeah.
And Tony's never rude.
Thank you Peony.
couldn't get through that one.
So let's break down Tony Esmond.
Well, I'm like a psychological invasion of my brain.
Oh no, we haven't got that long, and it would get very Lynchian.
Yeah, start running the shower now.
Like Twin Peaks. So instead of Tony, let's shine the light on you, Peony.
Yeah.
And your work and like how you've come to be in this sort of area of comics, books, and artwork in general. You know, what's your origin story?
Yeah, give us your origin story. That's always interesting.
It's not quite as exciting as
it weren't bitten by a radioactive.
No. Paper. Yeah. Oh, I wish that'd be quite exciting. I went to, I did my undergraduate degree at illustration in Edinburgh, and I think, that was 2012, I think, I went there, and then I graduated there in 2016, and kind of, really got into making little experimental comics and stuff there. I think that was, like, the place where I first started to get into comics properly, I'd say.
So were you a reader of them before that, or was it just something you kind of got in because of the illustration side of things?
No, I have always read them. Like, my dad's really into comics.
I wouldn't know that. Okay.
Oh yeah, no, he's always been a massive fan of like Hellboy, and I think he kind of like had the classics. Like, he had V for Vendetta, he had Swamp Thing. So I kind of grew up reading them. But
oh, cool.
Never like regularly subscribed to anything myself or anything.
Sort of supernatural, Vertigo-esque kind of area your dad was into then, I suppose.
Yeah. Spider-Man is like his all-time favourite, though.
Oh, good man. So, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Shout out to Mr. Gent.
Oh, he'd be very happy about that, actually.
Yeah. We'll have to get him on one day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he should.
So what sort of thing were you working on there? Were you surrounded by people who were making comics? Was that the environment, or...?
Not really, actually. It was quite a varied course, which was really nice. You've got some people making some really quite conceptual installation-y type things, and then some people who are very much more like, I want to do my own webcomic and that's all I want to do, and have it be quite more traditional.
Yeah.
So it kind of, I think it was a nice space for experimenting and trying out little different things. And to be honest, I only ever started making my own comics because I think we had to for the course once. Yeah, and I just really got into it, really, really enjoyed it.
So who were you sort of looking to as an influence at the time? Because your comics are not exactly Spider-Man, not exactly Hellboy. What sort of influences in your art were you feeling there?
I was actually just looking more at illustrators who happen to make narrative art rather than comic artists. It's quite embarrassing to be like, I think actually it was Nobrow at the time. Which now makes me feel like I'm revealing myself as a massive fan of the company.
That's okay. We all are.
Not a job at. But Yeah, I remember actually one of my course mates bringing in, I think it was Hilda when it was still just Hilda Folk, the very first one. And I think he had Dockwood by John McNaught as well.
Nice. And, cool.
Yeah, and it was just kind of that idea that you could make these beautiful comics and narratives, but without having to stick to the rules I thought existed that, yeah, obviously don't really. And that was something that really made me realise that I could just put some words, put some images on a page, but I didn't have to, you know, I could just do it the way that I wanted and the way that I felt looked right or felt right.
Okay, because there's more of an instinctual feel to your work compared to some others, I'd say. Is that a good assumption or?
Yeah, no, definitely. It's very organic. And in fact, I tend to get a bit embarrassed because some people are really good at doing beautiful thumbnails and planning everything. And I tend to just kind of
keep going at it.
Yeah, until I get to the end. And then sometimes I'll go back and change stuff. But it does tend to be very much like keep going until it's finished and then work out what you've made and what to do with it.
That's
one of the things I love about comics, though, because comics is such a, especially when you start looking more into the independent world rather than what the essentially the mainstream dubs comics or, you know, what, you know, the larger titles that everyone knows, we don't need to mention here. But when you look into independent and certainly more artistic comics and, you know, into the form of like abstract comics or like you say, where the narratives are told slightly differently, you truly realise that it's a medium where you can do anything in it, like truly anything. And once you, just the freedom of it is something that certainly I've experienced even more over the past like 5 years since we started this show. It's a real eye-opener to what comics can be. And certainly
I don't think there should be too many rules either. I kind of like that there isn't, you know.
Yeah, and I love sort of finding out about like how different people work, because exactly as you say, Peony, I see these sketches and I see layouts, and sometimes I look at people's work and I instantly just feel bad about my own work, thinking, oh my god, that's so good, what am I doing? But then everyone has their own way of working, and you know, and as long as you're happy with the end result, and yeah, certainly you can look back on it and like you say tweak a few bits, but I think if you overthink it sometimes in the layout and the planning stages, like I know people that have been planning stuff for years and the first panel hasn't been drawn. Do you know what I mean?
It's too easy. Yeah, because you get too in your head about it. And I completely agree about comics now is just, it feels so much more open. I remember actually when I was younger and I wanted to maybe try a comic, and I, you know, the thing where you like draw in nice blue pencil and then you do the your ink over the top and it's really beautiful. But I, to be honest, I've just never been good enough at drawing to be able to do that. So I never finished anything because I never looked as good as these amazing people who did beautiful draftsmanship.
Okay, yeah. And it's to be fair, I think each to their own. I was saying to, is it Elizabeth Queerstreet just goes straight in with a biro, I think.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, and I think I watched Brendan McCarthy draw once at Bristol, and he just went at it with a black ink brush and drew the outline first and then drew it in. And I'm like, oh my God, that's amazing. You know?
It takes an incredible amount of skill to be able to do that.
Yeah. But there's a level of abstraction to your work as well, isn't there, Penny? There is. It's somewhere between abstraction and, I don't know, intuitive kind of feeling. There's a couple of moments in Park Bench Kensington where there's hands being held and stuff.
Yeah.
You must have thought that out in advance, did you? Or I know that was a real life one, wasn't it, where it came from a real life story, but.
Yeah, no, it did. I think, again, actually, it does tend to be kind of trying to illustrate a feeling, or because I think most of my comics are really about having a feeling or wanting to convey a feeling of a experience, whether that's something that somebody's telling me or something that I've experienced myself.
Yeah.
And then trying to make a drawing that encapsulates that without trying to directly illustrate it, if that makes sense. So it's not just, this is a sad thing, so I'm going to draw somebody being really sad, but I'll more draw, you know, use a combination of colours or line work that I think makes an image that feels sad rather than looks sad.
Yeah,
I'm never very good at describing it.
No, I get it completely. But it's interesting, isn't it, when you draw when you're drawing an emotion? It's a strange one, isn't it? And it doesn't need to be, like you say, it doesn't need to be completely on the nose.
No.
When I put this out there, then, do you think as an artist who's drawing something, do you think there's an empathic relationship with what you are drawing? Do you think you have to have that? You don't have to be sad to draw something sad, but do you have to get into a certain mindset to draw something sometimes, do you think?
No, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you really do. Because I think, art is at its core about empathy in whatever form.
Communication, isn't it, as well? Yeah,
completely. And I think if you don't try to get in that headspace, I think that's when people do end up making work that is purely decorative. Again, which I don't actually have a problem with, things are lovely. But I think when you don't have that emotional connection, you can tell it tends to feel a bit stiff or a bit stale because they're not paying attention to how it feels when you see it. They're just not paying attention to what it looks like.
Mm. And it's weird how it comes off the page at you sometimes. I mean, your book is a good example of that, but I'd also say In Waves is an incredible example of that as well, where the emotion just comes straight up at you, doesn't it? And I think to be in a certain frame of mind to draw something, sometimes you do, you can't be the opposite of that frame of mind sometimes to communicate that. I think is that a good way of, do you understand what I mean there, guys? Or
yeah,
is that
I'm still with you.
And I think you're right, because AJ, I think he's got, even though he's like incredibly good at drawing, so I think he could overdraw everything if he wanted and draw in all the little details, but he really doesn't, because it's choosing those compositions and what to highlight that really makes it, makes that emotion jump out at you.
Yeah. But I mean, suppose now the point I was going to move on to from there is the comics are, in general terms, not always, but in general terms, have words added to them. They have, they communicate in both the ways, don't they? They communicate in art and words. Mm. So being an illustration student, is that something you had to sort of tackle extra for your comics, or...?
Yeah, definitely. In fact, it was a really, really long time before I actually felt confident to use my own words in the art and the comics I was making, because I always felt like, I've trained to be an illustrator, I can be that, but I didn't feel like my words, I didn't feel like I had any authority in a way to use my own words. I think it's only quite recently that I felt like they can be just as valuable as the drawings, even though in park bench and stuff, the words are 50-50 with the images.
And that's probably, I would imagine that there's quite a few sort of artists out there who are starting to write for themselves that have that.
Especially in small press, I think. Yeah.
That's sort of like, there's so many amazing writers out there, but I'm sort of doing it myself now. Is this going to stack up, or... am I well read? Am I literate enough to do this sort of stuff?
Mm.
To the thesaurus. What's the word I'm looking for?
Is that, what kind of dinosaur is that? I think the thing that we had a conversation with it at work, didn't we? After I read your book, Peony. And if we focus in on Park Bench Kensington, it's a real conversation, isn't it? You managed to get down as much of the real conversation as you could.
It's a word for word kind of, we had a conversation, sitting on a park bench. And so then
you met a guy who was about to go in and hand himself in for being, I don't know what the term is, illegally here, I suppose, is the...
He didn't have a visa. I think he came originally on it was an education visa that ran out within a year or two. But he'd been here illegally for 8 years after that.
Right.
So 10 years in total. And and basically the bit of Kensington that I was in is really close to the Bangladesh High Commission. And he'd basically just got to a point in his life where he wanted to go home. He was sick of working and sick of London. And I think he'd just gone through a really bad breakup. He just really needed someone to talk to. So, he asked if he could sit down next to me. And we had this conversation about the point he was at in his life. And then when he left, it just felt like I felt very... honored, I think, in a way, to have been part of that. And obviously it's quite a rare connection to have that kind of conversation with a stranger.
Very personal from a stranger, isn't it?
I felt really bad, but I remember at first I thought, I was like, what's this guy doing coming down to sit next to me? He's gonna...
I completely agree with you.
And obviously in hindsight, I think I feel quite embarrassed that I was so wary of speaking to him at first, because it was just a very genuine moment. And then when he left, I just got my phone out and wrote down every word, every sentence that I remember him saying.
And I mean, to be fair, at this point, I'd like to say that in no way do we think that's a good idea for strange men to sit next to women at Bombard to talk to them. Glad to support that. But yeah, in your case, it did work out as you were sort of a friendly face, and he needed to unload his emotions almost, I suppose, is it?
Yeah, but again, obviously, I think that's why I was quite wary in the first place, because that's the only time in my life that that's worked out all right.
Oh, you've met Vince?
Oh, fortunately. Not unfortunately, I was about to say.
Unbelievable. That was so unprovoked.
I know, it'd been almost 10 minutes on the Tony clock before he'd got something in there.
Going back to it then, apologies. So, I mean, what point in that conversation did you think, I'll make a comic of this?
I mean, no, I think it was...
Just afterwards, or...?
Yeah, it was about a day or two, and right. I think it was just still something that I hadn't quite been able to process yet. And most of my comics do end up being about me trying to process something, whether that's an event or a feeling or a story that somebody's told me. But I felt really strange about it at first, because I didn't know whether it was quite voyeuristic or exploitative to make something out of that conversation. So I think that's why, yeah, I tried to do the thing where I only used his words. I didn't use any of mine. I wanted it to be an accurate representation of this moment in my life and his life, even if it couldn't be an accurate representation of his life as a whole, or, you know, I didn't want to project anything onto it.
Yeah. I mean, that brings up untold questions about the nature of art, doesn't it? And art replicating real life, and, you know, art replicates not only visual things, but, you know, emotional and verbal and all sorts of things, isn't it? And how, and our rights to do it, I suppose.
Yeah, and that kind of responsibility you have as well, of the people that you depict in your stories and comics, and representing them properly, but without also pretending it's the truth, because, you know, it can never be 100% the truth, because it's always an edited version.
Yeah, and there are lesser artists who would be tempted to twist it for their own devices, I would suggest.
Yeah, that's true. And to be honest, I'm still a little bit almost worried in a way that, because especially as it's something now that I'm selling, so I'm also making money off of this conversation that we had. So, but there's not really I don't really have an answer for it.
There's worse things to sell though, P. You know, you're selling something that is very valid in someone's life, and something that, you know, perhaps we could all learn a bit from it, couldn't we, really? You know. And then there are probably untold people in this country in the same situation as him as well, aren't there, you know?
Yeah, that's true. And I think I always tried to, or at the time especially, I thought of it as well in that lots of my favourite bits of art are little moments like that, or learning something about an experience that I could never have. And that I find, really important and powerful to read.
Yeah, it's interesting. Really interesting, yeah. Yeah, what do you think, V?
Yeah, I mean, it's so strange when it's a true sort of personal story. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, moments like that, I think, like, are truly, you know, it's almost like what you've done is a perfect form in order to represent it and get people thinking about it. And you've gone to the lengths of taking your words out of it.
That's interesting.
This is another person's story. It's not your version of another person's story. It's not you sort of, you know, your impression or your stamp on it is the artwork and the visuals that are representing, you know, what this guy's saying. But when people are reading it, they're getting, you know, hopefully the mixture of the words and the images come together to form an emotional sort of connection.
Yeah, I think the most important thing for me here is the word truth. There's a truth to it, which I think is what really, I agree completely.
Yeah, and there's nothing truer than just purely like that moment, that guy's experience and that guy's words. You know, it's not a promotional statement. It's not anything else that's trying to sell something. This is just someone's
There's
experience.
No bloody exposition. There's no like, all that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, so we've talked about it a bit, Vince, with my recent comic, and it's a similar, isn't it? We're just trying to get the truth of that person.
Yeah.
We're not interested in putting our own stamp on it. We're not interested in selling anything of our own. We're just interested in putting the truth of it from that moment. And I think capturing a moment is a really difficult thing to do sometimes, I think.
And with comics, the art is what is your emphasis on it? Is your stamp on it? I mean, like you're saying, Tony, with your comic, you know, these are true stories, and these are they're unvarnished, just pretty much just factual sort of statements, aren't they? But
yeah.
Then the style of the art that goes with each strip, or the way things look, you know,
yeah, that's important, isn't it? Yeah. That's the beauty of comics, man. Isn't it? Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? It's, and the other thing that I was also very struck with, P, is the way that you dealt with the dialogue. I think people, we talked about this again, you know, all we do is talk at work and muck about, and do a lot of hard work, obviously, but the,
oh yes,
yeah, but the people get language wrong, I think, a lot of the time. We don't speak in huge paragraphs, and we don't speak in explanatory text. We speak in little quick comments and snippets and nods, and, you know, there's so much more to language than people who just want to fill a word balloon while they're swinging through the towers of New York, yeah. You know?
I mean, that can be quite difficult, though, based on the comics. Like, you know, if you're talking about a moment in time, you know, you want to see the unvarnished, you know, just sometimes the disconnection of, like, natural speak. But with a more standard, you know, whether it be, you know, a Hellboy or the superhero genre, you know, there's a certain amount of exposition. There's a certain amount of hand.
Yeah, we have to talk about the demon such and such that's coming out of the hell mouth, and, you know, there has to be that to make it. But I think it, where we talk a lot about overwriting, is that did you purposely strip back a load of it, Pete? Did you just to get it right, to get a beat, because it's a music, there's a musical rhythm to language sometimes in comics, I think, or maybe a poetical rhythm, I think, is probably the better way of putting it.
Yeah, definitely. I think, well, for this one, actually, I deliberately didn't take anything out either, because I didn't want to add anything, didn't want to take anything out. But when I've made other books that are more just kind of like my own thoughts, it is a much more painstaking process sometimes, but also, again, quite intuitive, I think. Because I have noticed that when I overthink it or overwork it, it gets a bit stagnant and it doesn't work. Obviously, for other people, you know, they need, kind of like how some people need to really do the draftsmanship and put the hours in, and then it makes it all that much better for it. But for my case, if I overwork something, I kill it. It doesn't work.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I get you. Yeah.
I mean, I've noticed
maybe one day you'll shift up styles for a, you know. You've done it, V, haven't you? You change up a little bit sometimes, don't you?
I think so. I mean, the more work you do, you know, the thing that you did 3 years ago is so different from, you know, the way you're thinking or the styles. Mm. It could just be the colour you're using. You could just suddenly decide, I'm done with blue. I'm going to use, like, green from now on. You know, that's a very simple way of putting it. But
yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
But the thing about your work, Peony, as well, there's lots of... You're experimenting with lots of different stuff. I mean, certainly... You know, we've talked about Kensington, but, you know, stuff like Uxbridge Road as well.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That, you know, there's lots of... That's a very
different...
Do you want
to tell us a little bit about that one?
Yeah.
Uxbridge Road, that was one that I made for the Broken Frontier anthology, actually.
Oh, okay.
I think, from last year. And that was actually... actually, again, it was taken from a piece of writing that I'd done for a workshop I did at my MA. I did the visual communication masters at the RCA. And one of the workshops that we did was you have to do a piece of writing about a place. And so my place was Uxbridge Road. Mm. And so I actually just ended up going there and I walked down the entire street and just wrote down on my phone everything that I was seeing, everything that I was hearing. And so I had just this kind of chunk of, is it kind of stream of consciousness? That's what they call it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I had that. And then Andy asked me to make that comic for the anthology. And I just had that kind of in a drawer somewhere. So thought that I'd take that. And so I guess that one was a bit more of a direct illustration where I was just kind of weaving the images in with those words to try and again.
What inspired the colours, though? Because that's very much a black, white, and a sort of mustardy yellow. I love that yellow you used on that. But what inspires, like, the colour choices for each of your different projects?
Ooh, see, I think colour's the thing that I'm actually really worst at doing.
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
I disagree, yeah.
I get very insecure about my use of colour, because it does just tend to be black and white and then maybe one.
That's okay. Some of the best comics ever made are like that. Mm. Yeah, you know.
Oh, that's good. I'll take that.
Look at some of the Parker books. That's just one colour, you know.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for that one, it was just, again, well, I kind of wanted that, like, you know, that really nice yellowy city light that you get from street lamps.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And that's what I was thinking of. And it's quite a, it's an area with lots of cafes and stuff. And, you know, cafes always have that yellow on the signs, I swear. Mm. It's always that, you know, mustardy yellow and bright blue.
Okay.
I think that's where I kind of stuck.
Sorry, just to, when you said Andy, you're talking about Andy Oliver from Broken Frontier, aren't you?
Oh,
I know
yes.
He's a big supporter. We'd be wrong of us not to give him a shout out. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what have you got planned? Before we move on to a little bit of no-brow talk, what's next on the horizon from you from a sort of personal artistic point of view?
So obviously I'm working on... I'm the new... Hang on, have we talked about that? I can't remember.
Oh, we can move on to that now if you want. Yeah, so I know you've announced it on Twitter, but I mentioned last week that you had a bit of news because we recorded early.
Oh, yeah.
But I know you've announced it online, haven't you? So did you want to just tell us a little bit about that, maybe?
Yeah. So it's very exciting. I'm the illustrator in residence at the House of Illustration. I still kind of can't believe it. It still feels a bit like they're going to take it away.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I said that. I made that same noise when you told me that the other day. But I actually really like going to House. There's a real sort of gentle vibe to the place, isn't there? It's a real sort of nice
So where
place.
Where is that? For those that don't know,
just
where...
the back of King's Cross.
Yeah, Granary Square. It's kind of near the fountains.
Oh. Yeah, so it's part of sort of attached to St Martin's. St Martin's has moved there, isn't it? I think, is that right?
Yes, yeah, they've been there a couple of years, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. They have quite a lot of comic stuff. They do. They had a manga exhibition. They had Women in Comics exhibition a few years ago. I went to Comica was there a couple of years running. Paul Gravett's Comica was there a few times. There's a comics history definitely to the place. They've done up the back of King's Cross, and it's much nicer than it used to be. There's no sort of cars on fire anymore and that sort of thing.
Oh, nice!
It's out the back of there, but yeah, it's a really nice little venue.
Yeah,
not
lovely.
Huge, is it? But it's a bit like a cartoon museum. It's a kind of the competitor to that almost, isn't it?
Yeah. They've got two nice little gallery spaces and a little shop as well.
Yeah, yeah. So what does that entail? So and how did that come about? Maybe first.
Oh yeah, so it was just, I can't remember where I saw it. I think I just saw it on their Instagram that they were doing an open call. They do an open call every year. Every year, for the past 5 years, and then I'm the sixth one, they've had an illustrator in residence for the whole year where they do kind of 6 months worth of research and working on a project, like an entirely new project. And then for the last 5-6 months, they've put on an exhibition in one of their in one of the gallery spaces of the work that they've been making.
Oh, ace. And have you announced your project yet? I can't remember.
Yes. So although it's still all quite vague, because again, kind of the way that, and I put this in the proposal, I swear, because obviously the way that I work is quite intuitive, and so part of my proposal had to be the work that I'm going to make. I'm not sure what I'm going to, you know, I'll discover it as a researcher, I guess. But it's basically using the area around King's Cross and the area around the House of Illustration specifically, because it's a really interesting area with a lot of history.
It really is.
And it's kind of using that history, but also the modern day life there and the kind of the beauty of the everyday area, the everydayness of that area. And I'm going to do some poetry in illustration type installations, maybe an experimental comic as well. Inspired by the history and the everydayness of King's Cross.
It's really changed around there. I mean, I remember in the 80s, it was... You know, you took your life in your hands walking around King's Cross at one point. You know, it was a really rough area. I mean, but it's there's a few nice offices there now, and there's some nice pubs and restaurants and bookshops there now. So it is really interesting history to it.
Yeah. Yeah,
really interesting place. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I went for a walk around there today, actually, because I was doing a bit of work on the project. And it is interesting because there's still, because there's this very, you know, Cold Drops yard with all their fancy shops selling candles for £100 and stuff. But then you've still got those areas which is just complete building sites still. And, you know,
Vince
abandoned
shoes. Just dropped his pen, by the way, because he heard of a candle that's £100.
Well, I just want to know, what is the scent? What is it? What size is it?
Oh, money, Vince. It smells of money.
Oh, well, that's my kind of smell.
Yeah. Coppery smell of pennies.
Oh no. Oh, is that money? I thought you meant notes.
Man money.
So you'll be there sort of a couple of days, one day a week or something like that. And do you you work where in a place where people can visit and talk to you, or is it? So in other words, that's what they have at the Cartoon Museum.
Oh, nice! I didn't know that actually.
Yeah.
I'll be there sometimes, and I'll next in the new year I'll be doing some more kind of workshops and initiatives in the House of Illustration itself. But at the moment I'm more just kind of working from home or from a studio, because it's quite a small space, so they don't have a dedicated space for it.
So for those people though that maybe want to come along when you're actually there, are you going to like announce on social media or like put a shout out somewhere just to let
Oh no, definitely will. And all the people who work there are the absolute nicest, and they're so accommodating and really want to work with me and kind of help out any way that they can, which is amazing. Nice. So in fact I think I'll be using their social medias as well, and working. They've got a really nice education team as well that do outreach work in the area, so I think I'll be doing a little bit of work with that hopefully in the future,
because I think it's Mark Stafford is the artist in residence at the Cartoon Museum, and I think he almost has a day a week where he goes in and works and people can come in and ask him questions and stuff like that, I think he was telling me.
How long does this sort of thing last, that when you're named an artist in residence, how long is that for?
I mean, Mark's been there about 3 years, I think.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. How long's your tenure?
It's a year. So it's,
right. Oh, wow, nice.
Yeah, not bad. No, right. Really good. So I'll be working up until, I think the exhibition will start at the end of June, if I can remember. Right. Yeah.
Ooh, okay. So does it start at the beginning of the year, or is it now, as we currently speak, it has started?
It is technically, started. I think it was the 1st of December was the official start day.
Hey. The clock's ticking, B.
I know. Oh, believe me, I know. No, I keep needing to tell myself to calm down a bit, because I keep being like, oh, I haven't done any work. And it's like, well, I've only officially been doing it about 2 weeks, so.
If it was me, I wouldn't do any work. I'd just swan about in a cravat.
Wait one day before June and then be like, I should put some stuff up in the walls.
The student way of life. Oh, God, I haven't done any work.
That's my art, yeah.
Get the Red Bulls out and just have a night of it.
Yeah, tape a banana to a wall. Thank you. That's a topical joke for you there.
There you go. Look at us.
It is indeed.
We're so highbrow.
Right. I mean, this may be controversial to some people, but what the fuck?
But that's his thing, isn't he? I can't remember the name of the artist now. Can you remember, Pete?
I wish I could, but I can't. I know that didn't then somebody eat the banana?
Someone ate the banana, and then they had to pay the price of $120,000, which is what that banana duct taped to a fucking wall was.
Did he have to pay that money though?
Yes. Yeah, I think
really.
That's awful.
But if I had a few million, I'd do that just to wind everyone up. Do you know what I mean?
I have no doubt about that.
Yes, thank you. I can't remember the name of the artist, and I'm shame on me because I was listening to a radio program about him or them the other day, and he does taunt people, doesn't he? He does this sort of crap on purpose. I still don't agree that it's worthwhile. Yeah.
Ate it was also sort of like a very much antagonistic. Artist, I think, because he videoed it, him eating it.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, because he said it was performance.
Yeah, it's performance art. Yeah.
Like him eating the banana.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm into that. Who's the lady who made the unmade bed? I can never remember her name. My brain's gone to mush today.
Oh, is that Tracy Emin?
Tracy Emin, yeah. Because two Japanese art students come and have a pillow fight on that bed, and she got very angry about it, and I thought, oh, come on. Yeah. You made an unmade bed. What do you expect? You know what I mean?
I tell you what, is this the first time we've ever truly spoken about modern art on this show?
Yeah. No, because I mentioned that time I went to the Tate and I walked into an out back alleyway and I thought that the load of pipes on the floor was an installation and it was just some bloke who's fixing the pipes.
I tell you what, though, Museum of Modern Art in America, I absolutely love
it. Love it, man, yeah.
I love it. That's an amazing.
There's a long queue to get in that one most days, isn't there?
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
Not for me, because I'm VIP, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But talking about art, I think it benefits people to see, not necessarily modern art, if that's not your thing, but going out and seeing galleries and just I mean, I was walking around and there's stuff that is nothing like my art, but I'm certainly being inspired by a lot of things, whether it be like the feelings and the emotions that you get from a, you know, just a painting on the wall. And then you start to think after it, you know, a comic sort of maker will probably think, right, how can I turn that into a comic page?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. I was on a train once heading up north in like a 2-hour train journey, and I was sat opposite this lady and I'm reading a load of comics, and she started talking to me, and it turned out it was a quite well-known artist called Kitty North. Have you heard of her, P?
I don't think I have. Do you know what she's made?
Yeah, she makes sort of village scenes and stuff like that. It's all very... She's got... I think she's just exhibited somewhere in Chelsea and...
Oh, nice.
I think she's based up there, but has a place in... Everyone's got a place in Rotherhithe now. You're nobody if you ain't got a place in Rotherhithe. But, and I end up just having a chat with her, and occasionally I'd speak to her over online just to talk about her art and stuff. She keeps saying, oh, you must come and see it. You must come and see it. I think she used to be married to like the eighth lord of somebody or other, one of these sort of things. But yeah, comics does strike up a conversation. I think there's a middle ground for it all, isn't there?
Yeah,
you know? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Do some comics.
Yeah, as long as you're making comics, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you say, they do inspire conversations and just artwork in, you know, any artwork in general, I think. So, you know, don't just be stuck in your little bubble just making your comics. Get out and see things and do things. And what do you think is the benefit to... this is not something I do, but... in some ways I do, but just, you know, whether it be keeping a scrapbook or saving reference pictures or taking pictures of, you know, sometimes just typography that you just see on the street, like the amount of times I've just taken a picture like a normal looking building and people look at me weird, whereas I'm thinking, oh, I like that font.
Or I can see that woman getting undressed, is that what you think? Or
yes, Tony, is that
yes,
what you want me to
so.
Say
yes. Yeah.
Sometimes it's best to just say yes, isn't it?
I occasionally sort of, you know, slip a couple of items of clothes off before I close the curtains, just what? In the hope, you know.
Oh, God. I mean...
You both make just a noise that can only just be described as disappointment.
I mean, I wish I could say I was disappointed, but it's pretty much in line with... with, you know,
he's on brand. Tony. He's always on
yeah,
brand.
Yeah, exactly. You can always say that about him. If nothing else.
I mean, back to like your comics and sort of like your narrative books in general. I mean, what inspires you to actually turn like a moment or, you know, a place or anything into an actual sort of like 5-6 page bit of sequential work? You know, what makes you think, right, I have to turn that into a comic?
I think normally, unfortunately, it is normally something that I haven't worked out in my own brain yet, so it tends to be something that I'm feeling either conflicted about or really caught by, and and kind of the process is really important to me. It makes me sound very pretentious, but no. I think, yeah, for me, that whole process is just really important to my life, honestly. Like, it is definitely something that I think I'd do, even if I didn't want to make a career out of it or sell them anywhere.
Is there almost a therapeutic sort of element to it? You know, it helps.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's very, I find it very cathartic. And even sometimes I will finish it and I'll hate it and I'll put it away. But I can't remember where I talked about this somewhere else, but sometimes going back and looking at things that I've made before that was about, you know, very specific times of my life, and actually reading something that I've made and not feeling like that anymore or not being in that place anymore, that can be really helpful for me, I think, to have something that is so concrete, like this was this time in, like, I think I made a comic about when I first moved to London and I was finding it really overwhelming and I wasn't enjoying it very much at all, and I made a couple of comics about that, and I quite like kind of going back and look at these comics and not seeing myself in them anymore, because I'm not feeling like that person.
I mean, by extension, that's the whole of comics. That's why we go back and read some sometimes, don't we? Because we remember the place in time we were when we read certain things, you know.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
You know? Yeah.
Or like any time you sort of think back and just think, oh, how, you know, what was I thinking there? Or you notice your progression as a human being, don't you, when you look at work from like 5 years ago, or devolution of a human being.
Yeah, in
some cases.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I had this, I mean, I've not really spoken about this, but when I got pneumonia recently and the doctor said, you need to do something that isn't, you know, isn't involving you looking at emails or, you know, working on something. And so I started doing some art, and I'm not an artist, but I actually enjoy the process of, it is so absorbing, isn't it? As well, it is so, it take the time just zips by when you're drawing something. And it's such a nice thing to do because you're not looking at your phone. You're not really listening to the words in the song. You're not, you know, there's just... It's just you and the art, isn't it?
But when you do your work, you know, now that you're doing more of it, and I love seeing the pictures Tony draws, which are good pictures. They're not disgraceful pictures. Get your minds out of the gutters, people. They're really good. But when you do art, are you also almost not criticizing it? That's the wrong word. But are you? Is there a certain Have you gotten to the point where you're starting, there's a little bit of pressure on yourself when you do work? Because there's certainly a lot of artwork. I mean,
yeah, and I find, I don't know if you guys, I mean, you've been accomplished, is if I don't draw something for about a week, I lose a little bit of the added skill that I gained on the last occasion, you know?
Yeah.
I still feel like that.
Right. Mm. Okay. It's interesting to be like that, isn't it? We don't really lose it, do we? But it's a learning process, I suppose. It's I don't know, it's where your hand gets used to doing certain movements.
Completely. Yeah. I mean, I was away for just a few days. I didn't do any drawing for those few days. Came back, loaded up the iPad, was trying to sketch things, and everything I did, I just wasn't happy with. It was just like, this is crap. Then on the next day, you could get into the rhythm again. You know, you just have to keep going and not just sort of think, oh, everything I'm doing is shit.
Yeah, there's a real meditative element to doing, isn't there? If you're not in the right mindset, or you're not, you can't go in and rush something off, can you? Because you can really tell people who've rushed things.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So
it's just the communication of that, isn't there? You know.
Yeah, and I think again going back, you can tell as well that they weren't caring about it, and they just wanted to get they wanted to do it for the sake of doing it rather than doing it for a particular reason.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's got to come first. You've got to love doing it first, isn't it? You can soon tell it the people who don't, or the people who are faking it. Yeah, interesting. And
I just wanted to ask a little bit more about sort of mix. You do a bit of sort of mixed media. You do different types of art as well, don't you?
Photography as well. Yeah,
there's photography, and also I see on the website the ceramics, the bowl of which there's a bowl that just has the words "fuck off" written on them.
That's one of my my more meaningful and
I mean, I think it's never been more an important message than right now.
That's actually true.
Yeah. Right, let's get him into
moment.
Let's get him into John Lewis. Because the money we can make, Pete.
Yeah. So I mean, you obviously you love sort of trying out sort of different types of art and mixed media, and you know, what's your favourite types, you know, to dabble in?
It is drawing. Drawing is still top. But even then, to be honest, I don't, you know, when some people say like they really love drawing, like they could just sit and draw for hours and hours. But to be honest, I don't think I could. I get quite restless. I like to make lots of things really quickly. And So I like to do lots and lots of drawings really quickly. But I love ceramics, though. I haven't made any in ages, but because I can't find anywhere to get them fired, actually, here in London. But ceramics is also something which I just love. It's very cathartic, kind of making things with your hands. I really enjoy it.
Has anyone done some sort of comic project or involving ceramics? I mean, I just imagine like an art exhibition now, where it's almost a sequential narrative storyline, but told through plates or something like that on the wall. Do you think someone must have done something like that? If not, I'm doing it.
Trademarks, copyrighted.
As an ex-Catholic, there's probably a Stations of the Cross somewhere, isn't there? That's been done on plates by little old ladies. Oh. You know, I mean, that's the only thing I can probably think of. Yeah,
I mean, taking something like that, you know, a stock of plates, the thought bubble would probably kill you.
It's
good profit margin, though, if you're selling.
Yeah, and if you get hungry later, something to eat off.
Oh yeah, multi-purpose.
Heavy cornflakes. Yeah,
not on a plate. It's got to be a bowl.
No. Oh, you barbarian!
It'd just be terrible. You savage. Yeah. In terms of conventions, though, what has your convention sort of experience been like so far with your own personal work?
Oh, I've done LCAF quite a few times. That's the one that
the coolest one, obviously.
Oh yeah, of course, the run by the best people, best company. I've done LCAF. I've done Thought Bubble 2 years. I've always really enjoyed Thought Bubble. Thought Bubble was great. There's always a really good vibe. Lots of lovely people.
Yeah, it's good this year as well, wasn't it? We had a really good time this year, didn't we?
Moved to Harrogate. Great shout. That was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Did you do like any zine fairs and that sort of thing as well? Do you, Peter?
Yes, I used to do quite a few because I used to live, when I did my undergrad, I lived in Edinburgh. And so I did a couple of Glasgow zine fairs there and little ones at the uni and stuff. And again, they're always really nice. The zine community are just very supportive.
Yeah.
Thought Bubble is by far the biggest convention that I've ever done. Because again, I'm kind of on the boundary. I'm not really... I think a lot of people kind of came over to my table and say, this is weird. I think I like it. And
it's better than what they say at my table is, you are weird.
That is true. Probably related to less sales, that.
But, if you were in Edinburgh, though, did you go into Deadhead Comics at all?
I don't think I ever did. Whereabouts was that?
I think it's moved. It was... I think it was down towards the Brass Market. It's a little tiny, indie, crazy
little...
That's
where it was.
Was it, sorry?
Yeah, it was on a street called Candlemaker Row.
That ring.
Ye olde name. I did go in there, actually. Yeah, that was a good place.
Yeah, he just sort of shouts at you if you go in there. It's quite good.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, good. Sorry to sort of bring that up.
It's quite good if someone shouts at you when you walk.
Well, he's kind of very excitable or not at all. Although he's talking to his dog when I was in there for the whole time last time, but there you go.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Yeah. So moving on, Pete. So you came out of university, and how long before you started working for Nobrow was it?
So it was So I graduated by undergraduate 2016, and then moved. Kind of had a year out, not knowing what to do with myself, and then I moved to London to do my MA course at the RCA, and it was... Well, I guess I've been at Nobrow about 6 months now. Started in June, July.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Did you want to just quickly explain your role there? Or?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, I am a marketing assistant at Nobrow. And so I run most of the social media channels. So if there's any other spelling mistakes on Instagram posts or this time tweets, then that is my fault and not anybody else's at the company.
And you're also obviously my boss.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, yep. It's very responsible. And you kind of, we haven't, it's a subject we occasionally get asked to talk about is promotions. So you're involved in the promotion of the books as well, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. How are you finding that moving from almost from a sort of solely artistic side of things into the, the selling of the thing you love, I suppose, isn't it? Mm.
Yeah, it's been really, really interesting, actually. And I think especially, it's in a way, I really enjoy it because it's so much easier when it's not your own work. And obviously, all the artists that we represent, I just love so much. And everybody's so nice as well. And so I think that makes it very easy because it's so genuine. To be honest, I'm not sure how easy it'd be at another company, maybe, or if you didn't love the work so much.
Yeah, that's the benefit we've got, isn't it? Everything's so great. It's
exactly.
Sort of, yeah.
It sounds so fake, doesn't it? Sounds like I'm being held at gunpoint. but it does. Because when you're talking about things like In Waves by AJ or Skip by Molly Mendoza, and you want it to do really well. So you want to talk to as many people about it as possible or organize as many advertising opportunities for it as possible.
Yeah. I always think this is the best example is you and I went for a coffee, talked through stock checks, didn't we, down the road. And on the way back, all we did was talk about In Waves.
How to sell it to people better, how to get pick it up.
And we didn't have to. We could have just talked about, I don't know, the weather or something. But we were so excited about that book, we just talked about it all the way back. I think that shows how good our books are. I don't want to keep going on about it, but people know that I loved the company long before I worked there. And obviously so did you,
Yeah, no. And I think, again, that's the nice thing about having people without, marketing experience. I'd never had a job in marketing before, but because you love the work and I think because you know the scene and you know all the people in the comics world so well, it makes it a very, very easy job to get into and hopefully do quite well.
I mean, we had a few people who haven't been well, and we had somebody leave, and you've been sort of filling in bits and pieces, and yeah, I don't know how you do. I mean, I occasionally look at Twitter on like 12 o'clock on a, you know, 11 o'clock on a Sunday night, and you're tweeting, you know, you've got to go for it, haven't you, really, in this market, I think.
You've really got to commit.
Yeah.
But there's a way of doing it, though, as well, isn't it? I mean,
completely.
Yeah, I mean, some people can be very heavy-handed with it. There's a tone of voice, I think, which is very important to promoting work. I think it's very interesting that you say it's so much easier when you're not talking about your own work. I could not agree more.
We had a little moment at Bath, didn't we, the other day, where you went, "That's the first time I've heard you pitch that book."
Yeah, and it was very good, Tony. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, selling your own work can sometimes be very, very hard. Purely because I don't know that it's so personal to you. And also, if you're sort of conscious of other people, maybe you're thinking, oh, you know, you're too nice, and think, I don't want to overdo it. I don't want them to be fed up with me. But if you like someone else's work, and we do this every week on the show, it's like, read this. It's bloody amazing.
Nothing worse than the hard sell, though, isn't it? Yeah. That's the thing. It really winds me up.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And that whole, like we talked about this before, that whole put your book in someone's hand and get them to hold it. You know, yeah. I'm like, it winds me up.
Yeah. I always feel, because at comic conventions, I do tend to run the line between, I can never work out whether I'm ignoring people, but also I do hate it when I'm looking at other people's stuff and they won't give me a second just to have a look and have a think. And you don't want to be oversold. That always feels a bit too pressury.
I always think, just talk about, I always, you know, say, you know, if you need any help, and if they pick a book up, I say, can I give you a little bit of information about it? You know, and sometimes, and I think the thing is, our enthusiasm shows, I think, sometimes, you know. Mm. I think if you're enthusiastic, I mean, the amount of people I've sold, for example, in Waves or Kingdom, by just going, oh my God, I love that book so much. I mean, it's like that. You know, sometimes that's all it takes, and they see it in your face, you know?
Mm. And I think it's about respecting the people who you're trying to sell it to as well. Yeah. Obviously, with Nobrow, you know that so many of the people are fans of, comics in general. Like, they really know the scene. So you don't need to over-explain things or treat them like they've never picked up a comic in their life before, because, you know,
it's rare we get someone to the, I mean, MCM's different, but rare, Thought Bubble and stuff like that, it's rare that we get people to the table who haven't read, sorry to interrupt you, but haven't read a book of ours, isn't it, really, I suppose, Pete?
Yeah.
But that MCM's a whole different game.
Yeah, I mean, that, but that does also show the importance of something like MCM, because we're all about selling to the people that don't know our books.
That's why we're there. Yeah. Even though I did stand there at one point with you, Penny, didn't I? I said, "You're judging, aren't you?" And you went, "Yes."
Again, I can neither confirm nor deny.
Well, she may not confirm that, but I will say that any person who's tabled at an MCM has judged someone at some point throughout the day or weekend.
We had a blast, though, didn't we? We did have a laugh doing
it. Yeah, it was a good time. I'd never been to MCM before.
Yeah, it's quite an visual overload.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a lot. Never seen so many Funko Pops in my life.
Yeah. Were you near them again this time?
Or we weren't right next to them, which is what we were in May, but we were sort of one aisle away, I suppose. If you had to cross over another aisle, and there it was.
So you still managed to get your exclusives then, Tony?
I had to leg it in when we opened, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah,
you're always
first in queue.
Yeah.
I own two Funkos because people bought them for me and said they look like me. One is the Big Lebowski and one's Fat Thor.
Make of that what you will, people. The people that don't know what Tony Esmond looks like.
I don't look like that anymore. Anything else you want to talk about that's got we've got coming up at Nobrow? I know we've got a sale on, haven't we, Pete, at the moment?
Yes, we have 20% off at both Nobrow and Flying Eye at the moment with the code XMAS20, and that's on until the 20th of December.
Some good stuff there.
Get your that was almost like you two have practiced that. I'm a bit suspicious.
We talked about it the other day.
Put the sales voice on and everything.
Cool.
So there's probably a lot of our listeners out there who are probably going to take advantage of that sale. Cause,
yeah, I think so.
I know a lot of our listeners are huge fans of No Brad books as well.
Yeah, I've literally just sent a book to Mr. Brandon Muir as a little thank you, a little present from us, from No Brow, for doing the Christmas art swap. So there you go.
Yes.
Expect that, Brandon.
Yeah, and we'll put a shout out for that again in a second. But as well as No Brow, where can people, like, obviously, have you got a store to sell your comics and stuff, Peony? You must have.
Yes, yeah. If you just go on my website, I've got a big cartel, and you can buy, Park Bench there, a couple of the others. And then I think I've actually also got an Etsy shop, so I've got two. Haven't really transferred it all over yet, but so two different places that you can buy my stuff, people.
So the people who haven't seen Peony's books, they are a thing of beauty. I mean, do you hand stitch the spine in as well?
Oh yeah, Park Bench. That's it's got a rice grass cover, and it's all hand bound.
Now that's got the neatest little knot I've ever seen in the binding. I think that would make me go blind if I tied two of those. Yeah, that's the thing I always see with artists, is that obsession to just lovely detail. And I think you're the same, V. Always, it's always the little. I always know this when I lay out the convention table with Vince Peony. He's always very particular about it all.
The OCD kicks in. I don't know why. I don't have it anywhere else. What does Joe call me at home? A muckworm, because I'm so messy around the house. It's terrible. But when it comes,
I love that phrase. I've never heard that before.
But when it comes to a convention table, it's like, line everything up. Don't touch it, Tony. Don't touch it.
It's that. And he takes a picture of it, and I take a picture of him taking a picture of it.
No, it's important to have pride in these things. Exactly. I understand. Don't worry, Vince. I'm on your side.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. At least someone on this show is.
Yeah, good. Well done, Pete. Yeah. I'm not.
So cool. You got a big cartel. What's the best way? Is it through your website?
Just peonygent.com. It's a good thing about having a weird name, is that nobody else ever has nobody else has anything else on Google. It's just me, so just Google my name and I think it's the first thing that comes up. Amazing.
Mind you, if your dad was a Spider-Man fan, you could have been called Mary Jane or something, couldn't you? Aunt May or something. Aunt May Gent.
Oh, I think I'm glad they went with Peony over Aunt May. What, aunt the first name? And then
double-barreled. Yeah, it'd have been fine.
Double-barreled.
Yeah. I was going to be Dr. Octopus Esmond, but,
There's still time, Tony.
Yeah, I think so.
Would it be shortened to Doc Ock?
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
What's wrong with Doc Ock?
It's a bit like Penn Island, isn't it? If you put the letters in the wrong places, it doesn't work out well. Stan must have known that when he called him Doc Ock. Just to wind a letter up.
Yeah, must have.
Yeah.
You have to make sure you get the spacing right on there. Anyway, that was quite a... Do you know what? Quite a highbrow conversation.
Normally I'll just get a bit bored pinning and start swearing, but that went, I think that went okay.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad.
You are welcome back on the show. I think sometimes this show needs cleaning up, and you're welcome back anytime just to keep things.
Thank you.
Definitely. Yeah. I think as well as Peony kept making me promise not to wind her up, and Katie kept saying, no, please do wind her up. Just in my ear, just over my shoulder. Yeah.
Well, I knew you were going to be a good guest when we just briefly met at Thought Bubble, and you just looked at me like, yeah, I know what he's like. I thought, yeah, that's right. That's good.
Spent too many hours with Tony.
Yeah. It does something to you, doesn't it? On a core level. It changes you.
Level, I believe, is the phrase.
I remember when I first met Tony, I used to believe every single thing he said.
And now I
have to do the opposite now. Assume everything's a lie, and then I can get corrected if it's actually true.
The thing is, I don't even mind that. I quite like that. I'm living that reputation, I think, now.
Yeah.
I've made my own bed around that.
I don't know why, so many people believe you, Tony. I don't get it. Like, when we're at BAM, I actually had to tell someone, don't believe a single word this man says.
I can't even remember what that was.
I think you're the devil.
I just do like sitting on your shoulder just shouting at you a lot. That makes me...
Yeah, but that's got nothing to do with the devil.
Yeah, we did laugh though, man. At a couple of points, I was literally crying with laughter and I realised we had a customer standing in front of us, so I'd been ignoring.
Yeah, because we're professional.
That's us.
Anyway, from brilliant art and intelligent conversation to the shout outs. Do we have any shout outs?
Have you got any, Penny? Would you like to go first?
Is this just something that I've really enjoyed recently?
No, this is just if you've got any events or events coming up or anyone else's work you want to promote. And then we'll do like a recommendation after that.
Oh, honestly, I've just been trying to get to the end of the year. No more events for me.
Okay.
Although, do come to my exhibition at the House of Illustration, where there will be some work there, and it will be in June.
Yes. And you may listen to this in 2020, because some people like to...
Yeah, I will do. Yeah. I'll be breaking out my safari suit.
What?
You know, the suit with short sleeves. Oh, like they were on
Nektari. It's like a deleted scene from Jumanji.
Oh.
I've got some shout-outs.
Oh, have you, Tony?
Yeah, first one to Joe. I'm really pleased that we're now not mortal enemies. We've made up. Joe's Vince's wife. Vince's partner, pardon me, Penny. And she previously were mortal enemies.
No. But we've made friends now. She had to live every day with you telling everyone that you were mortal enemies.
I was about to say, I can't assume that it was anything that Tony said that would have made that happen.
Thank you. Exactly.
Yes, but now they're best friends, and I'm the odd one out. Yeah.
Next one is Aaron Rackley did his first 5K for the charity Little Heroes today. Well done, Aaron. Go to Just Giving and look for Little Heroes Comics, and you'll be able to give some money to that. It's a worthy cause that we support as well. Me and Vince are currently working on our next Monster Spotters Club strip, aren't we?
Yeah.
So any day now, and Vince has done the cover, which is looking superb for the next issue of the Spark.
And the artwork is... pencils have begun, so you'll be seeing something soon, dude.
Are we going to play that message now?
What message?
The message we got sent. Am I going to have to find it while we're talking?
Oh, well, I can play it now. We've got a message from... this could be controversial.
Yeah.
On this show.
I believe the phrase we're going to say is, who needs awards? Who needs prizes? Who needs to be shortlisted when you got an advert and a message from Jesus Christ himself?
So here you go with a bit of audio from Jesus Christ. Take it away.
Hey, Awesome Pod. Jesus here to say thank you for the awesome episodes each week. I know it's been a year of up and downs, but keep up the amazing work. Maybe less swearing. And as always, stay awesome.
Well, how is that for a Paul
thank
quote?
You, Jesus Christ.
Thank you, JC, for one, being a listener. Who would have thought it?
Yeah. I would have thought the downloads must have been the angels as well.
I honestly thought this show was sacrilegious in pretty much every way, shape, or form. But you know,
we're upsetting the God botherers as well.
I'm constantly surprised by who listens to this show, and that goes to show that you know our reach is far and wide.
I have no clue how Aaron did that, but he sent it to us yesterday, and it did make us chuckle.
Yes,
that's amazing.
Yes. Thank you, Aaron. All a good laugh.
Yes.
And thank you. I just want to say a little thank you. I'm having a bit of a social media break at the moment, but thank you for all the kind words on nice words that we and messages we got on last week's episode. It was funny, but it was also honest and open and a little bit sort of. Well, I don't want to say emotional, but I guess it was at times, wasn't it?
Yeah, we got a bit confessional, didn't we, almost?
Yeah. Thank you so much to everyone for like the kind words and everything. It did mean a lot. And keep listening to the show, because it's onwards and upwards from here. So,
Oh, can I give a little shout-out to Grant Richards, who sent me his Damaged Case sketchbook, arrived yesterday.
You can? There's some and you just up. Did.
Yeah, he's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's, love his stuff.
I mean, his artwork's amazing as well.
So. Yeah, outstanding.
Yeah, you've got to follow him on Instagram because it's crazy stuff. Crazy good stuff. Anyway, from shout-outs to recommendations.
Yes.
Shall we have the guest go first?
Yes, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, take it away.
I would like to recommend, I think, Internet Crusader, that new... Avery Hill. The new Avery Hill one.
Yeah.
Haven't actually finished it yet, but I bought it at MCM, and I've only just started to got around to reading it, and it's so good. It's just really interesting, and it's really, it's, oh yeah, it's how to even describe it? It's like a kind of a very 90s computer, and it's like a story told through all these like little pop-up boxes and MSN things and strange adverts, and it's just great. Yeah, go Google it. It's the art's amazing. Really recommend it.
Yeah, I think we've got it in the review box to read, actually. V.
Nice.
A review on it, but it looks like a real sort of retro 90s internet page, isn't it? Is the way he's told it. Who's the creator? I forgot the name.
Oh, it's a George Wildsol. I think I probably butchered that. But
yeah. No, it's good stuff.
This show wouldn't be an ACP without someone butchering a name, so I'm going to do that in a minute.
Yeah,
that actually sounded quite good, the way you described that, so I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, it's quite a dense read as well. I was having a look to review it, and I thought this is going to take me a while. I need to go back to this. There's quite a lot to it, isn't there, as well?
Yeah, because I remember originally seeing the art style, and I thought it'd be a really quick read, but there's actually so much content there. It's really cool. Yeah, lots of layers.
Yeah, nice one.
Nice. Cool. Check that one out. I need to check out Avery Hill's recent sort of...
Yeah, they've got the books they've got coming out next year as well.
Oh,
This Odie Pomeroy's book looks fucking excellent. I love his stuff.
Yeah, really, his art is beautiful.
Yeah, he's just got a lovely line, isn't he? It's so clean. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind of way that I wish I could draw, you know, with precision. Imagine.
Is he an architect, I think, isn't he?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's got, there's a touch of something similar to that in his working background. You can tell that.
Oh.
Yeah, Between the Billboards was a bit like that, wasn't it? And he's got a book out from Top Shelf as well, I think, at the moment, or coming soon. Yeah, it looks really nice. Yeah, and he's a really sort of solid, supportive guy in the small press arena in London, isn't he?
You often
see him. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, cool.
Nice.
Nice one.
Do you want to go next, Tony?
Hold on to your hats, my friend.
Oh, God.
The Sons of El Topo, Volume 2, Abel, written by Alejandro Jodorowsky, art by Jose Ladron, coloured by Ladron and Hugo Sebastian Fuccio, translated by Edward Govan, lettered by Darren Bennett, published in Europe by Glenay, and it's published in the UK and America by Arkea, which is a company owned by Boom, I think I'm right in saying. Mm.
They put out some lovely printed books as well, the quality of their books.
They do, man. Yeah, their mouth guard stuff and that sort of thing. Really nice. 79 pages, hardcover, oversized album treatments. But it's, there's various sizes to European album sort of sizes. Yeah. This is the larger. So if anyone who got the Mermaid Project or something like that last year, this is that oversized, which I'm really pleased about because we'll talk about it in a minute, but it's a gorgeous book. It's a sequel to Volume 1, which I talked about this time last year, and it actually came out almost to the day this time last year, Kane. And it's... It's a continuation of a 1970 Western movie, El Topo. Has anyone seen it?
No. Did you talk about El Topo Volume 1?
Yes, I did. This time last year it was. Yeah. Yeah. And it's the movie is, I think it's referred to as an acid Western. I think it's the sort of subgenre of it. It's just,
oh God,
nuts, like proper nuts. Yeah. The movie and the graphic novel are problematic in what they portray, I'm going to say. In the same way we talked about it last year, there's a problematic element to this. And I'm going to read into it in a certain way in a minute, which I think kind of makes up for the reason of it. We'll get into it in a second.
Okay.
I've never ingested, I suppose is the best way of saying it, anything by Jodorowsky, because for those that know anything about him, know he's a filmmaker and he's a novelist and there's a series of autobiographies by him and he's a comic book maker and, you know, stuff like The Inkle and The Meta Barons and stuff like that as well, that I haven't in some way found sort of slightly disturbing and troubling in a way. He's he never does anything particularly coherently, and his I've read an autobiography of him last year, and there's a sort of various claims in it and mad sort of spiritual mystical claims in it that you think, I don't know whether you're right in the head, geezer, and if you do believe this, I don't, you know, or if you're making it up, I still don't think you're right. You know, he's a strange individual. He's a very sort of single-minded guy, and if you listen to him, he makes all kinds of claims about how brilliant and genius he is. And in fact, I think at one point he claims that El Topo is the movie that started the grindhouse late night cinema fad of 42nd Street that produced so many of my favorite movies. That's what he claims anyway. I'm not sure if he walks a line between, in this and a lot of his other stuff, a line between enigmatic sort of depth to what he's doing and a real sort of self-parody of himself. I mean, the character is himself. He played the character in the Kale Topo, and he is drawn again, a much younger version of him, in this book. Moments of it are very strange, and the dialogue is very sort of fragmented, and his characters could start an argument in an empty room, in a sort of really sort of spiky, caustic, melodramatic way. There is a message in this, I think, somewhere amongst the madness. I'll just talk a bit about the madness. So it opens with he's asleep on the back of a horse, and there's a nun riding the horse, and he wakes up as the horse sinks into this bog, and he has an argument over the woman because his head keeps going under, and she says, "No, I'm standing on some land," and he looks underwater and says, "No, you're standing on a dead horse," and that's it, the in and out of the intro. It doesn't really have any bearing on anything else, unless it's sort of something about death and life and water. I don't know. You could write whole novels on whole books on the implications of his comics, to be fair, and people have, I suppose, about the Inkle. So they're rescued by a group of people who look like an Amish version of Western people traveling across the West, you know, yeah. And taken to a strange clearing, which it suddenly doesn't seem to be raining and there's no wetness anywhere. And a woman appears, a sort of matriarchal character who's kind of in charge in some way. And she's got like oversized sort of wild cats on leads. And this sort of strange and older and aggressive and just bizarre woman says the nun now has to be the victim of the holy rape. And that's what happens, or an attempt at it anyway. Oh, and Christ. It's I think that he is shining a light on the crimes of the Catholic Church, I'm going to say, in this. It's so one man tries and she burns him. They are unable to penetrate her body, and she burns her body, burns him. And another man has another go, and she burns him, and these men are screaming. And then an old white-haired man appears and sets her free whilst he's reading a religious passage from Psalms. And she sort of escapes, by which point Cain is sort of oblivious to this all, is just sort of fuck it, and has ridden off on his horse. But that's the sort of nature of Jodorowsky storytelling. It doesn't make much sense a lot of the time. It's just bizarrely...
I know. It's definitely something that there are fans that are... If you're a fan of
people
his stuff...
crazy about his stuff. Yeah, Holy Mountain. And you know, people went crazy because he tried to make Dune, didn't he? I think the chances of ever making that version of Dune were virtually zero. Yeah. But there's quite a good documentary about him. And I think, is it Dali who helps him make it?
Yeah.
And he meets his brother. So his brother is Abel, who's a sort of bald-headed... If you imagine, he looks like a Buddhist monk kind of thing. And Abel is travelling across country in a cart. And in the back is their mother, who is dead but is not decaying or any showing any signs of her death, other than being sort of... You know, she's dead, but she could easily be in a coma. Her flesh is still... You know, it's not... It's she's just laying there.
Yeah.
And he keeps making comments of this strange, alluring fragrance that's coming from the body. Oh. And it's just, and at one point, one of the most beautiful pages of Ladrones actually is it draws a load of white butterflies across. So Ladron doesn't, there's nothing he doesn't draw. He draws every single thing on the page, you know, every bit of background, every tree and everything. And these butterflies begin to swarm around the cart. And it's a beautiful moment, really beautiful moment. Now that there is the first 10 pages. So if you think that's the whole comic, that's like the first, not even the first act of the comic. Yeah. Some other examples of the craziness of it is suddenly we're presented by a bandit army who look like a sort of Mexican bandits with the sort of wide-brimmed Mexican hats attacking a castle which is manned by bearded nuns who are attacking them back with bows and arrows. The leader of the attacking Mexican bandits believes himself to be a dog and is sitting on the floor surrounded by flies and gnawing on a bone and barking. It's just strange. I'm just bizarrely drawn to stuff that Jodorowsky does, and I don't think if you haven't read The Inkle or you haven't read The Meta Barons, I think it's definitely an experience. But it's just strange. It's hard to put down sometimes. It's It's so weirdly transgressive, and it's so jumbled, and it's so the opposite of anything you see in comics otherwise. It's, I don't know, everything is exaggerated. He exaggerates everything. So every naked woman has huge breasts, every violent act has, you know, blood everywhere, and every army is 1,000 people on horses. He must be a nightmare to work with. I can only imagine he sort of writes everything in, you know, peyote or something. It's nothing. So it's nothing like anything you'll see out there. I'm surprised that Arkea put it out. I think I said this on the previous review. Mm. When, if you want to look for most of Jodorowsky's current work, you're going to find it in Humanoids. I know he's put some stuff out through Titan and other French publishers, but in the English-speaking world, most of it you'll find is through the Humanoids US imprint. But this, I don't know whether someone balked or they couldn't afford it, or I don't know why, but Glenn A. have sold it, the rights to Arkea, and Arkea seem to... They put them out in lovely hardcovers. They're not long books. I mean, they're 80 pages pretty much. It's insane. It is insane, and the story is troubling. And I would say, if you don't know what you're getting with Jodorowsky, don't dip into it. I think if you're of a sensitive nature, don't go into it. But I genuinely like to think that that moment we talked about earlier was done to illustrate a fact of the evils of organized religion, I think. Whether that's right to portray it like that, I don't know. But I mean, if these things did and do still happen. Ledron is just revolutionary. His artwork is just...
He did Elephant Men, didn't he, for a long time?
Yes, he did. That's exactly right. And that's kind of what he's probably known best for. He's done some Punisher and other stuff. He hasn't got a thick line. He hasn't got... But he uses some great colours as well. There's some beautiful colour work in this. There's the cart that they travel across the desert is just this sort of browny red, and it shows up so well against the green and brown of the desert and the mountains and stuff. It just really is some interesting stuff. His designs are very strange. He's being led undoubtedly by Jodorowsky. He has to draw Jodorowsky as the main character, who's got this sort of strange symbol on his shoulder. But they come across knights, they come across bandits, they come across demons. They come. The end has got... I won't spoil it for anyone, but the end, there's a battle in the end, and Abel has to fight this sort of huge character who looks a bit like a sort of Turkish warrior, I suppose, Mesopotamian warrior in a way, something like that. I'm hoping there'll be a third one. It's really interesting to see books like this. I think sometimes it's $14.99. I bought mine out of Forbidden Planet. It's on sale currently on Comixology at $6.99, reduced from a tenner. But I'd recommend the hard copy if you can. I'd say I would recommend it to people who know what they're getting with Jodorowsky. I think if you go in blind, you know, you'll think, oh my God, what is this madness? You know, but just go in for Ledron's work on its own. I sent you the image of the huge warrior. Did you see that one I sent you, Vince, over the weekend? Yeah, that's some impressive artwork, man.
Amazing stuff. Sort of,
like, gorgeous stuff. Boom-studios.com, or just get it from your local comic shop. All local comic shops should have it, I would think. It's they had a few in Forbidden Planet still. Yeah, it came out this week. I think that's my one.
Nice. Right, how do I follow that up? Well, I'll follow it up with a book that I read quite a few issues of. Four out of the five that are scheduled to be released. And it's a Comixology original. I took a shout on it because I thought, I want to try this out, because it's part of the Comixology Originals line of exclusive digital content, which is available on Comixology and Kindle.
This is free stuff we found the other day.
Now, yes, it's free, but not free, as everything is these days.
Yeah.
You know. The title and many others are available as part of Comixology Unlimited, Kindle Unlimited, and Prime Reading. Now, I have Amazon Prime, you know, for delivery, and the TV or whatever, which means I've got Prime Reading, so it's a Kindle thing. You can go into your Kindle, and it works very much. It's almost like a library book. You can pretty much download 10 books, read them, return them, and then get some other books. That's the way this works.
Oh, is it? I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Well, the Prime Reading, that's the way it worked with me, because I just thought, oh, free books, so I was just going to download loads. Then I maxed out and thought, oh well, I guess I have to read them.
I haven't hit that number then, because I downloaded some into my Kindle, but I haven't
Yeah, I think it's 10. The maximum you get 10. It's fine. You read it, you return it, and then you get a new one. And it's a really, it's a great way. Much like libraries, people visit libraries. It's a great way to discover books and like try these things out. You can also like buy these, you know, buy these books from Comixology. It's $1.99 an issue. I know the originals line has quite a lot of different titles on there of all different kinds. But the title that I checked out was Breaklands, which is a Justin Jordan book.
Yep.
I'm a big fan of Justin Jordan's writing.
He writes a lot of horror stuff, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he's also The Legacy of Luther Strode,
anyone knows.
And obviously went on to work on other things. I think he did Shadow Man with Valiant and stuff as well, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, so he's worked with all the major companies since doing Luther Strode, but I've always liked his sort of writing. And Breaklands is essentially Mad Max meets Akira. That's what it says.
Okay.
In a future where history was reshaped by godlike psychics, Cassa Fane is the only girl in the world without a power of her own. When her brother is kidnapped, she's going to need to use everything she does have to get him back. Pretty simple, you know, kidnapped brother, someone traveling across this land. But this has, and I've read 4 out of 5 issues, and I just read them just bam, 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 one after the other. This is a really great title. This is like the world building in it is really, really impressive. Without telling you, without exposition, sort of saying this is the way things are, this is the way things are. It, there's a lot of action in this comic. In fact, Jordan says every issue has a bit of blurb from him as well that sort of relates to like the issue you've just read or what's about to come, which is quite cool because that's got a nice bit of humour. And he blames, he says he blames it on Star Wars or lots of things like Star Wars. But there was things like when he'd see people with the Force using it in fights, and he was thinking, well, you're not, you know, you've got that. Why don't you use it as much as you could do?
Yeah.
He wanted to see the, so he thought he'd write something that actually just properly went into stuff like that. And you saw like massive fights with these people with these powers. And it is essentially, it's a post-apocalyptic world. Unlike kind of things you've seen before, and it does have those elements of, like video game stuff like Final Fantasy. There's, you know, the weapons are huge. The characters are sort of colourful, but there's also a post-apocalyptic landscape with like people driving sort of like put together cars, and there's gangs, and there's cities in the middle of nowhere that are trading sort of spots. You're discovering it. I like this world building because it feels like there's a huge, he's built a huge universe.
I've been watching shitloads of movies like that recently. I've told you, didn't I?
Yeah.
The old, as soon as Mad Max came out, a load of film companies in Italy just made loads of movies like that. And I love that design.
Yeah, and they filmed them like in the middle of Cyprus or something, didn't they? And Justin said in one of the back pages, he goes, I've created a huge world for this. Most of it you probably won't see. Which I think says a lot about world building, because, you know, when you're creating a huge universe like this, everything has to sort of, it's good to have that sort of, that Bible in a sense, so that everything, you know, should you need it, you know, he's probably written loads of things that he'll never touch upon or has forgotten that he's got in this book. But this book does definitely feel like there's a real world here without it really pandering to a new reader. It sort of takes you in with the story, and that's what I like about it. You know, you get a sense of what the characters are. There's some cool powers. There's a guy called there's a sort of villainous sort of gang leader called Nitro Eddie, who his sort of power, he just points his fingers like a gun, and then whenever he says bang, there's sort of like a kinetic explosion that happens wherever he's pointing his hand to.
Finger guns.
Yeah, it's literal finger guns. But it's not like an actual sort of like gun blast, but it's almost like kinetic, just force.
Pierney does the finger guns a lot.
Is that how you enter the office every day?
Yeah, that's her little moment.
Yeah, I don't get a freeze frame, but I do get.
Yeah, she does. Here comes the hot stepper. Comes on, and she does a bit of that.
Automatically, she's the greatest person ever.
I'll take that. That's all right.
Put that on the back of a book, Pete.
Here comes the hot stepper.
That's on the next one.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Apologies.
No, I mean, there's not. I think this is a sort of book, if you like huge sort of worlds or apocalyptic worlds, just strange creatures, you know. There's
within
the first issue you see this huge, it's almost like a ginormous bear, but its head is like a almost like a goat's skull, you know, and it's not like a helmet or anything, that's just the face of this creature. So you're in a world that isn't like our world, but it, you know, there's enough parallels. And the main character bumps into a motley crew. You know, you've got the meeting the crew that are going to help her along the way. And I loved it. I thought Breaklands was really good. I mean,
I'll look this up. I've got that, so I'll look this up.
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, like I say, it's a quick read as well. Even when they're doing the exposition dump, which they don't really do, you know, but because of the nature of the way the story is happening and characters are just, oh, we're here. Well, don't do this in this place because this will happen to you. Do you know what I mean? It's a natural sort of exposition.
So, I'm writing a post-apocalyptic thing with Mr. Falp at the moment, and we've done it in the form of a scroll.
Amazing. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. Yeah, so if you're a fan of post-apocalyptic stuff, of which I think quite a lot of comic book people are, Breaklands is one you definitely need to check out if you can.
And if you're a fan of the designs of Mad Max, watch this space.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So the only thing about this book is I hope they do printed versions. Obviously, Comixology are pushing it very much Comixology Originals at the moment, but I know some of these books are elsewhere. Perhaps they...
Hopefully, It's not as if I get to see what new books look like anymore because I go to Orbital, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah. Oh, shade. But
sneaky dig.
Yeah.
So, the creators, though, before I give it a shout, is written by Justin Jordan, art by Tyre Setta, which is a great art style. It's very clean and very bright, and it's not grimy at all. Coloured by Sarah Stern, lettered by Rachel Deering. Like I say, it's on Comixology and elsewhere, wherever you can get this. Definitely check it out. And Justin Jordan, if you go to justinjordancomics.com, you can read some of my best comics for free, as he says, or not. I am not the boss of you. yeah. So yeah, great stuff, and it probably won't be the last time we talk about that creator because he's one of those. I know these creators sort of become bigger names, don't they, as they go on, and they do a lot of Image books. But it's nice to see them do work like this that just comes out of nowhere, which is just
So there's some interesting stuff I talked about a couple of weeks ago, didn't I? There's some interesting stuff coming out.
Yeah.
From there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't realise that Ask for Mercy was actually a comic till just the other day. That's how thick I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
that's a weird name for a hall.
Is that one of the books you've downloaded?
I think it might be. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I've got another one. The next one I'm going to read from them is Black Ghost. The Black Ghost.
Okay.
Have you heard of that one? Which looks more like a pulp sort of story, I think.
Oh, okay. Mm. Like a noir-y thing, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So so watch this space because, like, you know, as we're going to discover,
and they're free. We love a free comic.
Yeah. Yeah. So another avenue of comics that we're finding out more about.
Yes.
Also, shout out to Matt Strott. I don't think I've forwarded it to you yet, Tony, but Matt Strott sent us an email with more information about Indiegogo. So,
good man, because we didn't understand it, and we clearly didn't the other day.
Yeah. So just a little clarification. So we'll probably talk more about that in the future. But for now, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode.
Yes.
And our lovely guest, thank you for joining us.
Again. Thanks,
Ben. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Been good. It wasn't quite as bad as you thought it would be, I'm going to say. Is that true? Or?
I don't even think you made fun of me at all. So I think you held up the bloodo. I'm really proud of you.
It's usually me who gets bullied on this show, Peony. That's what happens.
I can fully get behind that.
Oh. Brilliant. And we hope you enjoyed it, folks, and everything we talked about. Of course, if there's anything, I mean, it's the last guest of the year, but we're gonna put some shout outs for we've got an interesting couple of weeks, the last few shows of 2019. Our next one,
I've started writing mine down.
Yeah, our next one is going to be our favorites of 2019. If you've listened to shows throughout the year, You'll probably hear some of the books.
You'll get
most of them. And we're going to put a shout outs when we announce the categories that we're going to talk about. We want to know the books and creators and stuff that you like as well. So this is it's going to be sort of an open forum as we go. You know what these shows are like for us. It's just a huge sort of recommendation and wasn't.
Yeah, massive. Open our eyes to some new books as well. We're always looking for new stuff.
Yeah. Because if something's become one of your favorite things that you've read or seen this year, then that's always a good way to get someone else to check it out, I find.
Yeah.
Awards be damned.
Yeah, who needs awards?
Yeah, who needs awards? There's a conversation out there.
Yeah. Not, it's not been had by us, but we have watched it go on.
There seems to be a bit of a hot topic at the moment, but all we know is...
Was that meme of someone eating popcorn watching it all go on? Yep. That's been us this week.
That's pretty much us, yeah. But all we know is there's loads of brilliant comics out there, and we're going to talk about some of our favourites next week, and we want to know about some of your...
No, we're just talking about our favourites, so that's it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just an extended recommendation show. That's essentially what it is.
Yeah.
But with added fart jokes.
We've been quite polite this week.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Just think of what I've got to go back to next week, Peony. That's all I've got
to say. Oh, Pascal and Brian, you've got to go back to them.
No. Does she even know what they are?
Then
we're not going to explain it for your own sake.
I'll never explain it to you. I've told Tristan. He's the only person in the office who knows.
Oh. Okay.
No. Don't ask.
Maybe I'll ask Tristan in a safe space.
Oh dear. So, and there is no safer space than emailing us if you want to talk about the things.
Oh, smooth.
You've got it, Vince. Everyone spots this smoothness. Yeah.
If there's any, if just in case there's anything you want to let us know about, discuss, maybe there's some tiny Christmas comic zine fair happening in the next few days.
Yeah.
It probably won't happen. It'll be Christmas before you know it. Or something that's happening very early in the new year. Let us know about it because we're
always looking for exciting new events. So if you have got one, please let us know.
Even if it's just a signing in your local comic shop, just tell us, because those sort of events are important.
Even from a no-brow point of view, we're looking to widen our events thing, aren't we, B? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. Always up for going to new cons and stuff. Yeah. Or new fairs.
Yeah.
Yes, there you go. So let us know, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we sort of announce what we're going to be talking about, but we'll put out the shout out for next week's show as well. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you do Facebook, there's only one place you really need to be part of, and because I don't do Facebook much at all, but I do check out the brilliant group that is Awesome Comics Talk, which is filled with a brilliant community of people. There's no hard selling. There's no just posting links for something that no one cares about. It's people talking about comics, comics events, and just creating comics. There's advice. There's fun. There's art swaps and all kinds happening there, and it really is a brilliant place.
Yeah, there's a couple of... quite a few new people this week. Loads of them are all talked about being listeners in the little questionnaire. Yeah, it's good stuff. Yeah.
And thank you to all our new listeners anywhere, by the way. We truly appreciate every single one.
I think we met a couple at BAM, didn't we? A couple took postcards and wrote it down. And I think one bloke downloaded it while he was talking to us. Do you remember?
Yeah. I think that might have been Jesus.
Well, we've got to thank BAM as well, haven't we? We've got a little thank you to the guys there.
Yes.
RLC. Thank you, RLC.
Thank you to all the guys from part of the BAM collective. For the day, which was a fun day. I got to stand next to Tony all day, which I haven't done.
We've done that at a convention for a while. We did have a chuckle. Honestly, I was crying with laughter at one point.
Yeah.
And they made a story up about me on the balcony, didn't they? Rachel and Dave
and
is Adam, it Nunu or Nini? I can never remember her name.
Adam Faup also took part in it as well.
Yeah, which is unrepeatable.
Absolutely unrepeatable, but hilarious. Yeah. But thank you to anyone that turned up on the day and picked up any of our comics, artwork, prints, or anything like that. Yeah, it's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, comic event is always a good event, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I travelled down with Falpy and we had a giggle. It's good stuff.
Yeah, we did indeed. And then we had a cup of tea and a slice of cake afterwards, didn't we, Tony?
Yeah, I bought you a slice of cake, didn't I?
Because we're proper gangsters.
Oh, very wholesome.
Yeah. It was lovely as well. It was like gingerbread.
Nice.
Thank you for listening to us. If you want more of this high quality content, then go to awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, please like, subscribe, leave a review. Helps get the word out about the show and more fantastic and diverse and brilliant creators that we're trying to get on every week. And there's going to be lots more of them in 2020, so look forward to that.
Yeah.
Likewise, if you listen to us on other networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife, what are the networks we're on, Tony?
Well, funny enough, we're on a couple. We're on, if you're both a toy collector and a comic creator, you can go to Pod throwing your toys out of the pram. That's quite a good one.
Right.
Or if you're a Star Wars fan, you can go to Pod Mandadorkian.
I think it's best we just leave him to think about what he's just said there.
I made that word up. I was quite proud of it.
I mean,
I Pierney, don't want to say you shouldn't have been.
Yeah. I mean, Pierney, what do you do on a day-to-day basis? You know, when he's like this, how do you deal with it?
It's you normally just have to ignore him.
Oh, right.
With their headphones in the office. I go in, all right, chums, I'm all excited. I'm very upbeat. You know, I'm clicking my fingers and singing a song, and they've got the headphones in. They ignore me.
I'm normally not even listening to anything. I just...
What was
just
that?
Trying to, I'm not normally not even listening to anything. Just avoiding the gaze.
The thing is, I can't do that because I've got my headphones in now, which means I can hear him.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
People asked if you were brothers at BAM, didn't they?
Yes.
You had the same hair,
yeah,
same beard.
Well, you also look like a sexier Ewan McGregor now, don't you?
That is true. I had a Texas tuxedo on, didn't I? I had a denim jacket and jeans and a tie.
But I did not.
No.
I'm just really pleased you didn't say that I was your dad. Anyway.
Again.
Do people normally believe that one?
If they do, then I have a serious problem with these people. Anyway, where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Neverhideanything.blogspot.com. Ezohyz on Twitter.
Nice. You can find out more about my comic at theredmousefrommars.com, and you can find out more of my art, etc. on social media, Twitter and Instagram at Jester Diablo. Dan Butcher, who wasn't here this week, but he was here in spirit.
Yeah, he's texting me just now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hopefully he's still unpacking all his comic books.
Yes.
Yeah. But you can find his comic at vanguardcomic.com and also find him on Instagram, etc. at Vanguard Comic. Pierney, thank you for putting up with us. Where can people find you?
So they can find me at pierneygent.com or pierneygent at Twitter, but then it's Pierney with two underscores on Instagram, just to be difficult.
Underscores are the coolest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's proper legit, that, isn't it?
Double underscores.
It's like double guns.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Had to carry it over into the internet as well.
Oh, here comes the hot stepper.
Murderer. Anyway, thank you for listening, everyone.
Yes.
From Tony Pierney and myself. Have a brilliant week. Go forth. Check out loads of artwork and read loads of comics and just have a brilliant, brilliant week. And just be inspired. And as always, what do they do, Tony?
Stay awesome, chums.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.